this weekend is the annual rendezvous at Grand Portage, which is just up the shore from Grand Marais. And it is held in conjunction with the Grand Portage Band Rendezvous Days Powwow. And we are joined now by three folks who participate in the rendezvous. Reenactors Ray and Kelly James, who portray a surveyor and a traveling artist, and fiddler Carrie Lutkowski, who specializes in fur trade songs and other music of the time, some 200 years ago. Ray, Kelly, and Carrie, welcome to the Roadhouse.
Thank you.
We want to start out talking to Ray and Kelly, who really do the reenacting, and because I didn't give much of an introduction of that, I would like you to tell us what reenactors do and how you got started in the whole scene.
This could be a long story, but I'll try to make it brief.
Okay.
I saw Bess Parker in Davy Crockett and fell in love with the Kentucky Long Rifle, and through a series of events, I wound up getting into historical reenacting.
We talking about the 1950s then, with Davy Crockett? Or?
Yeah, I'm a lot older than I look. Yes, the first time I ever fired a flintlock rifle, I fell in love with it, and not that I have a lot of them, but I have one that works really good, and that's what got me started. As far as my persona of a land surveyor, it's just some avocation that I've always admired land surveyors, and it gives me a reason to collect surveying equipment. So if anybody out there has antique surveying equipment, they need to get a hold of me.
There are some local surveyors, who do have some of that, but I think they hang on to it rather jealously.
Yeah, very much so.
And you both have been working this scene together, I gather. So what do you, Kelly, what do you portray, and how did you get started?
Well, I actually portray a woman artist in late 1700s, early 1800s. I have always loved history, and starting early on, I've been involved in history in one way or another, and the arts. And in the mid-1970s, I had an aunt who started the Bicentennial Wagon Train, going backwards from the northwest part of the country for that bicentennial, and she needed somebody to come spell her, so I became a mule skinner on the Bicentennial Wagon Train, and through the course of that, discovered that I loved interpretation of history, or bringing history to life for people, and watching that tactile, hands-on visual that they would experience as we came backwards across the country, reenacting those wagon trains. So then when I got back to the Midwest, I realized I really wanted to keep doing that, and I started to get involved in the living history interpretation. And as an artist, I was always told that, like a writer, you should write about what you know, interpret what you know. So I became an artist back in that time period. And I have undergrad degrees in studio painting and art history, and it enabled me to kind of pull all those pieces of myself together and be able to talk fruitfully to people.
Okay, so you and Ray are both from Rockford, Illinois, so you obviously do a bit of traveling to go to these events.
We do.
Yeah, we've been to the East Coast and down south, and not real far west.
Have you been to Grand Portage before?
Oh, yeah.
Every year.
We love it.
Well, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Grand Portage scene, what period you represent, and what does the camp look like, what are the numbers, and so on?
I'm not dead sure on the numbers. I know there's over 300 participants out there right now. And if you divide that down by three persons per camp, that's 100 camps. And in a small area, that's really tight. The time period is from the late 1790s to 1803, when the Northwest Company had to relinquish the fur trade post and move it up the lakeshore into Canada, because some fool surveyor said that the boundary was a little bit, about 8 miles north of them. So that's what happened. But that's that time period around the early 1800s, 1803 is the time period that's represented there.
And of course, we're talking about the rendezvous when the voyageurs inland brought furs, and I suppose Native Americans as well brought furs to Grand Portage, and then they were traded for goods.
Yes, absolutely. There's a very fine movie at the Visitor Center that I highly recommend because it gives a Grand Portage story in a very visual manner.
Yeah, that whole Visitor Center is a spectacular piece of a museum and history itself. So
a little bit about the participants there. These people are very, very concerned about their craft, and they go to extreme measures to make sure that they're getting things right. And if they find something that they have that isn't right, why, they change. So their personas are constantly being revisited.
And I know you've got some weather to deal with now this weekend, and I know you're all camping. So tell us about what type of tent you live in and what kind of bedding you use to be authentic.
Sometimes we cheat. there are those that maintain a certain amount of historical accuracy, and then there's us who have been around for a while that our bones don't agree with laying on the ground, so we stuff a little foam mattress under us.
Oh, that's all right.
But we have wedge tents is primarily the dominant tent of the time, and some of us have a little awning out over front that we can cook our meals on a campfire.
So you cook on an open fire?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And a variety of things.
And, who regulates it? I mean, how authentic do you have to be, and who kind of watches over to see what is and what isn't authentic, if anybody?
Well, the rangers do a pretty good job of that. Carl and Steve, they run around camp and they look for things that aren't quite appropriate.
Credit cards and cameras and phones and
yeah. Now they'll close their eyes if somebody's taking out a camera to get a good picture. No cell phones.
One of the things too is that the people in camp, people who do this as a passion hobby, monitor each other. There is a lot of peer growth. So you have mentorship. People who are a little newer into the field and just starting to do their research might not be as far along with as authentic as they are, and others will quickly guide them and point out the things they need to kind of tweak to keep being more and more authentic. It's like an ongoing research project, and you never reach that nirvana of a personification.
You're totally satisfied.
That's right, and you keep kind of moving with it and researching to make sure that you're accurate.
Well, you know, I saw something on the website or somewhere about a camp bouche. What is a bouche?
That's the boss.
That is. Okay.
That's the guy that's in charge of everything.
And is that the guy who maybe tells you when you're out of line in terms of your portrayal?
That's Carl.
Okay.
Yep, he does a good job of that.
All right. For those of you who just tuned in, we are speaking with Ray and Kelly, You guys got too many first names here. Ray and Kelly James of Rockford, Illinois, about their reenactment. And we're going to turn pretty quickly here to Carrie Lukowski, who is here with her fiddle. All right, Carrie, can I turn to you for a moment? And you are the young person in the group here. You're not a reenactor per se, or you haven't been involved in it as much. But you're working up at Portage now at the National Monument, and you've got a beautiful fiddle here, and you know some tunes of the period.
Yes.
How did you get involved in this?
Well, I am a volunteer for the National Park Service, so I am working for the entire summer season at Grand Portage. I am living here in Minnesota for the summer. I am originally from the Upper Peninsula of Michigan. And I have always been very interested in all the things that are a big part of Grand Portage, the history of the place, especially the emphasis on traditional arts and crafts and skills of the Northwoods area. And to work at Grand Portage, especially for the first year, is like a wonderful apprenticeship. You have access to the guidance of all the senior staff members who are so wonderful at showing you how to do things. So, for instance, in the course of my work, I got to help pluck quills from a porcupine the other day, and work with birch bark, and cook in the bread oven behind the kitchen. So I work all the time in period clothes, and we don't do first-person interpretation, so I can speak to the public as myself in 2015, and my job is to be there to help people appreciate the park.
And you also play some music at the monument.
Yes.
Tell us what you're going to play for us.
I will. Now. I play at the monument fiddle music that you could have found in the fur trade era, which includes several different genres, namely Scottish. Obviously, that came with the Scottish fur traders. Also, French Canadian, again, very fur trade, very much a fur trade influence from the voyageurs. And another style that I show is Métis music. Métis meaning people of French or Scottish and native descent, and they also have their own style. So I could play for you now a Scottish tune. Goes by a couple of different names, but this one I usually call Mason's Apron.
If that won't get you in the mood,
beautiful.
Thank you.
That was gorgeous.
All right, that's really great. I'm going to come back to you in a minute and ask you to do another one. If I know you have to go tune your instrument here, so that's fine. Let's turn back to the reenacting, and maybe if you could tell us historically what is sort of the list of character types that would have been at the rendezvous?
Predominantly, it would have been the voyageurs, as far as the largest number, not to exclude the Native Americans. But the voyageurs, they were the backbone of the fur trade. And then you have the Scottish partners and their English partners and their traders.
They were more like the businessman type and stayed at Portage?
Well, they would come in and out during the course of the season, but they would have a company meeting and get together and do their business, if you will. But the voyageurs were the backbone. These hardy young Frenchmen, and I say young because it took a lot of physical exertion to do the work of a voyageur. Not only are you paddling these 30-foot Montreal canoes, but you're porting 90 pounds of cargo on your back whenever you do a portage. And these guys were workhorses.
How long did they stay at Portage? I mean, how long did the whole rendezvous take in terms of, you know, because they had the meat from coming from Montreal and then coming from the Northwest Territories or wherever they were that they came from with the furs.
It's kind of a fluid thing when business was done, but generally a few days to a week, maybe a little more.
And the folks that, so the reenactors that are here now really are portraying voyageurs, and not the company men doesn't the monument itself provide the people who represent the company men? And
no, that's our reenactors as well.
Oh, is it really? Okay, cool. Yeah.
So when we gather like this, we are bringing in all of the characters to portray what needs to be portrayed as a rule.
All right, and so. When people come up there and see you and talk to you, are you going to be talking to them as though you were 200 years ago, or are you talking in your own?
Nothing against first person. It's very, very valuable, but it tends to confuse people.
Yeah.
It's off-putting. Part of what we're trying to do is really draw the public in. And if just trying to keep up with the rules of first person will keep someone from asking the right questions or wanting to interact with you, then we try not to let that happen.
When you're in your camp, what foods are sort of historically accurate and how are they prepared?
I'll let Kelly do this one.
There again, for the most part, we try to follow correct protocol, but we aren't hardline about it. Mm-hmm. When we are, depending on if your portrayal involves more food preparation, in the kitchens we make sure that we have the produce and the rice and all of the things that you really would have more accurately. Those of us that are off in the rest of the encampment may actually be doing, have a stash of things in the cooler that we do have a lot of fruits and vegetables and things, but you can also have maybe something that's not completely period correct squirreled away and under wraps. But for the most part, it's, you know, good wholesome breads and things that you would have and make.
And are you working on little hand projects or anything like that while you're there?
All of us have our strengths that we do. When I'm in camp, I'm usually working on miniature portraits because I precede photography by about 40 years. There are those who have different crafts that they do. There might be or repairing a canoe. I just was watching some retarring of canoes this morning so that they could take them back out on the water. They had kind of develop some cracks, and there's that constant repair to the natural things. Mm-hmm. But there's also workshops on tinning, and there is work going on in the ovens. There's baking going on. There's anybody that has a particular style or craft, or that's when they share. The works of the blacksmith is working inside the fort walls. And I
gather you folks have traveled to other scenes of reenactment and so on. How do you rate what goes on in Grand Portage with in comparison with what's else around the country?
I'd give Grand Portage 100%. Yeah. It's by far...
I kind of felt that, and I wanted to hear it if you would say that.
Yeah. If there is anything that isn't real appropriate, it's made up for with the quality of the people that are there. These folks are wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
They're wonderful.
Yeah, and for our listeners, if you haven't been up there, get yourself up there because it is a great show, and these folks do such a wonderful job. And Carrie is now ready to give us another tune, I think. Tell us what this one is, Carrie.
This tune is one that I play in the fiddle program that I give at the park. It is a tune that demonstrates the cultural overlap between many of the 1700s fiddle styles. It's got two variants. One is Métis and one is French Canadian, but it's basically the same tune played just a little bit differently in two different traditions. Thank you.
Carrie Lutkowski. My gosh, that you filled the room more than anybody has ever filled this room.
I was just going to say, we've had the privilege of having many musicians in the studio, and that's one of the most delightful music I've ever heard in here.
Well, thank that you
was
so
that
much.
That was one for you listening out there. That was one person and one instrument.
Absolutely glorious.
It was really nice.
So you aren't so very old. When did you start playing fiddle?
I started when I was 5.
Okay. and did you first train in the classical?
Yes. I started out, as many young children do, with Suzuki violin, and I play classical music as well as fiddle music. When I was a teenager, I started playing modern-day Canadian fiddle music, which ties in very nicely with the fur trade, because even though, as Ray was saying earlier, we're in the United States, we talk a lot about Canadian history, so a lot of the music that I play happens to have roots in the fur trade era.
And did the musicians of the day have fiddles similar to what you're playing here now?
Yes. Fiddles in the 1700s are largely the same as what my modern fiddle is, with a few minor differences. There'd be a couple of parts that a modern fiddle has that a 1700s wouldn't have had. My bow would be shaped a little bit differently. And also my strings that I use nowadays are synthetic aluminum instead of animal gut. Mm-hmm. But other than some minor differences like that, it's the same instrument, and a violin and a fiddle are the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's really adds some wonderful flavor to our discussion here tonight, and we really appreciate all of you here for being here. And I wish we had even more time, but let me just ask you if there's anything any of you would like to add to what we've discussed at this point.
Actually, Carrie? I was thinking a bit about what you said about the quality of Grand Portage event. Mm-hmm. And it can really be summed up in a nutshell of the sustainability of an event. It attracts the quality of the good musicians and good portrayals, and that is the sustaining factor. When you see an event continue to go on and to grow and to continue its teaching role, then you know that it's attracted quality people. And that's how you can really look at an event and know that it's successful.
That's a good point, because it's so authentic. I mean, I really, really enjoy every aspect of it when I go up there. So
I know that there are folks in camp from West Virginia and quite a distance. People
Amazing.
Come and they put this on their docket like we do.
Yeah.
We're both in higher ed, and we make a point of these are some of the events that we keep when they are worthwhile to travel for.
Well, we really all appreciate all of you do to make this event so authentic and great every year.
I think you need to come up and see my surveying display. I really think so.
All right, I'll do that.
I've got some quality instruments there, some of them dating back to the mid-1700s.
Yeah, I know. I have a surveyor friend here in town who showed me some of the things that they used when they did the first surveys up here, and they were unbelievably simple compared to what the kind of equipment the guys use now.
Simplicity's the key.
Yep, works. Thank you all very much, Ray and Kelly James and Carrie Lutkowski. Have a great weekend up there, and we'll see you back next year as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Real pleasure to have you in the studio. Thank you.